Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
The Faceless People by Ashley. This happened about 8 years ago, at the end of 2017, when I was 22. My family and I have had quite a few paranormal experiences over the years, and maybe one day I'll share more of them, but I've been thinking about this particular experience ever since I started listening to this podcast. First, I need to set the scene so you understand why we were where we were at the time. This occurred in my hometown, a small coastal town in Namibia, a popular holiday destination, especially during December, which is summer for us. My now fiancé and I were about 2 weeks into dating, and I had just gotten back for the holidays after studying in South Africa. On the day this happened, we had gone to one of the many beach festivals being held here before Christmas. Now, in the interest of transparency, there was quite a bit of alcohol involved. By the time we got home, it was around 12:30 a.m. We had stopped drinking hours earlier, with plenty of food and water in between. We stayed up sitting outside for about another hour, not wanting to wake my parents. Until my boyfriend decided there was no way he could sleep at my house and risk running into my dad. The reason for that is long and complicated. But basically, they hadn't officially met yet, and their first encounter hadn't gone well. My dad wasn't exactly a fan at that point. Ultimately, I decided I couldn't go one night without being with him, so we both decided to leave my house again. There were no taxis available that late, so we started walking to find a hotel. None were open. So we made the bright decision to walk back to his aunt's house, which was in the complete opposite direction of mine, on the far end of town. It was far, especially on foot. All this to say, by the time the incident occurred, we were definitely sober. We'd been walking for a while, talking and laughing. The town was completely quiet, not a soul in sight. It was probably around 2:30 a.m. As we walked up one of the main streets, we passed a small house on the opposite side of the road. It had a low wall around the front yard with an open driveway. I'd walked by that house countless times before and never felt anything strange about it. But that night, something was different. In the driveway, and part of the yard, was a group of people, all dressed in black cloaks or robes, with their hoods up, the streetlights illuminating them. They weren't making a sound, just standing and sitting together, facing each other. If they were speaking, we couldn't hear it. As we approached, watching, but saying nothing, they all turned to look at us in one synchronized movement. It was unnatural. Very, very creepy. We both froze. We didn't speak or even look at each other, just stood there staring at them while they stared back. It was so quiet, I couldn't look away. After what felt like a full minute, my boyfriend suddenly gripped my hand tightly and pulled me along. We didn't run. It felt like running would be bad, but we walked fast, turning down a side road to get away. I didn't dare look back, though I hated having my back to them. Once we'd rounded a bend, we finally ran. We kept running until there was probably 2 kilometers between us and that house. When we finally stopped to catch our breath, we turned around. Nothing. The street was empty. We still hadn't spoken. The first thing I said was, "Did you see what I saw?" He looked at me, disbelief and horror in his eyes, and said, "They didn't have any faces." We had seen the exact same thing. When those beings turned to look at us, their faces were completely pale and blank. We could see the bone structure beneath the skin, but no mouth, no nose, no eyes, nothing. It was like the features were hollowed out, the skin ashen and lifeless. They hadn't moved toward us, but the unease we both felt was overwhelming. We were terrified, exposed and vulnerable on the dark streets, but we kept walking until we reached safety. We still talk about it to this day. Neither of us have any explanation for what we saw. I tried researching it, thinking maybe there'd be some local lore or similar reports from Namibia. But we found nothing. I've never experienced anything like it again. You ever have one of those nights where your thoughts just won't shut off? When your brain says, "No, no, no, don't go to sleep. It's time to stress out and think negative thoughts about yourself." Well, if you can relate, maybe you've also come to the realization that it might be a good idea to find someone to talk to. But then there's that whole health insurance thing. I'm sure my fellow Americans know what I mean. But that's where Rula comes in. Rula is a healthcare company that makes it easy to connect with quality, in-network therapists. They work with over 100 insurance plans, so the average session costs around $15, sometimes even zero when you use your insurance. So the coolest thing about Rula, I think, is that they match you with a therapist who fits your goals. Whatever your preferences are or your background, they got you covered. No random pairings or endless searching. And you can find an appointment as soon as tomorrow. Plus, they stick with you the whole way, checking in to make sure your care is actually working. Thousands of people are already using Rula for affordable, high-quality therapy that's covered by insurance. Visit rula.com/trails to get started. After you sign up, you'll be asked how you heard about them. Please support the show and let them know we sent you. That's rula.com/trails. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget. I should also mention they have over 15,000 licensed therapists eager to help you get to where you want to be. Rula supports every aspect of your mental health journey. Again, that's rula.com/trails, rula.com/trails, for better therapy covered by insurance.
Encounter with Anton LaVey by HBTC Head Games. Let me take you back to middle school. I used to skateboard to school every day until I got caught ditching and was banned from bringing my board. Instead of following the rules, I started hiding it under a stairwell a few houses down from campus, tucked beneath this old house. For a couple of weeks it worked. Then one day, my skateboard was gone. I decided to knock on the door of the black house, just in case someone there had seen anything. This man answered. He looked to be in his 50s or 60s, quite calm, very sharp eyes. When I asked about my board, he said, yes, he had it. Then he asked if I knew what the symbols on it meant. At first, I thought he was upset, maybe religious and offended. The board had a pentagram on the bottom. But instead of being angry, he smiled and told me that he was a Satanist, someone who followed the teachings of the Church of Satan, which he proudly said had been founded right here in San Francisco. He offered me a deal. I could have my board back if I agreed to let him teach me the ways. I declined. He then handed me a small black book and told me that if I ever got curious, I should read it and come to see him again. I took the book, but I never read it, though I held on to it for years. Eventually, I threw it out, but even after the next event, I held on to it for another year. So, fast forward to the summer of 2012. I was 16, living in the Haight-Ashbury district. Like a lot of troubled teens in the city at the time, I had gotten caught up in psychedelics and these cheap, sketchy research chemicals that we called alphabet soup. That summer, my friends and I somehow ended up getting invited to a college party. A group of students had rented the bottom floor of a house right on the corner of two streets, and weirdly, the guy who lived there had the same name as the street intersection. Just a strange coincidence that kind of stuck with me. Anyway, the night of the party rolls around, and despite us being underage, me being 16, the oldest among us was 17, no one seemed to really care. The party was packed, and in the corner of the living room there were two tables. One had several bowls filled with weed and mushrooms, with a cute little sign. It said, "Help yourself, just make sure you can help yourself get home." We thought it was hilarious. On the other table were rows of cups, red, blue, and green. No signs, no labels, no clue what was in them. So naturally, like the dumb kids we each grabbed a red cup and downed it. Within 30 minutes, we were outside chain smoking, legs bouncing like we were gearing up to sprint. I was sweating even though it was freezing out. The high hit hard and fast, and it didn't feel normal. My friend Austin said it felt like Molly, but way stronger. I tried to stay calm and ride the wave. I had had bad trips before. Panic just made it worse. Eventually, another friend, Steve, started clutching his chest and insisting that we find out what the hell we had taken. I went with him, and after a while, we tracked down one of the college kids who actually knew what was in the cups. And here's what he told us. The blue cups had Molly, 2 grams, mixed with OJ. Green cups were 400 micrograms of acid per drop, and there were 4 drops per cup, also in OJ. The red cups were methadone, 2 grams per cup, also in OJ. My stomach dropped. Methadone? That's not a party drug. That's a synthetic opioid used to treat heroin addiction. We had had an entire cup to ourselves, each. Steve was freaking out. He ran outside to warn the others. We all tried to make ourselves puke, but we couldn't. After an hour of panicking, we figured if we were going to die, we might as well die under the stars, so we climbed up to the roof. The staircase to the roof was narrow, winding up 3 stories. Austin was ahead of me, I was in the middle, James was behind me, and Steve was behind him. James's phone, which had been dead all night, suddenly turned on and started flashing violently, lighting up the entire stairwell. The moment that the flashing stopped, we all froze. Standing at the top of the stairs, just to the left of the door handle, was a man in a black cloak. At first, we thought this was a prank. His face was so clear and so real. But then I recognized him and I felt the blood drain from my body. He looked exactly like the man who had taken my skateboard, and more specifically, exactly like the photo on the back of the black book that he had given me years ago. Anton LaVey. He was wearing blood red beads around his neck and reading from what looked like an upside down Bible, muttering something that sounded like it was in tongues. He didn't acknowledge us. He didn't move. He just kept reading. James and Steve rushed past us towards the door, but as they reached the cloaked figure, he vanished. Gone, just like that. They stumbled through the door onto the roof, and Austin and I followed. Once we were up there, we all started questioning each other. Did you see that? What did you hear? Are we tripping? Then Austin asked, did any of you recognize him? I nodded and told them the skateboard story. Now, I described the man from the book, the founder of the Church of Satan, and said that I was sure it was Anton LaVey. His face is unforgettable. At first, nobody really reacted. In a way, it looked like they thought I was joking. But later that night, when we were crashing on the floor and my phone finally turned on, I looked up a picture of him to show everyone. The second I turned the screen towards them, the room went dead silent. Everyone saw him. And then I read something I didn't know. Anton LaVey died in October of 1997, just 7 blocks away from where we saw him. Now, I don't know what I really saw that night, whether it was the drugs, a hallucination, or something else. But I do know that we all saw the same thing. And I haven't seen him since. If somehow I let your energy attach to mine, I'm glad it's been severed, so Anton LaVey, or any negative or harmful spirit for that matter, let's not meet.
The Man in the Mirror and the Lady by the Grass by Alexandra. When my daughter was almost 3 years old, we had an experience that still gives me chills. We were sitting in our living room, eating strawberries, then suddenly got up and walked toward the front door. She began holding out strawberries and talking softly, as if she was offering them to someone. She was looking upward, as though the person she was speaking to was taller than her. When I asked what she was doing, she simply said she was sharing the strawberries with the man. A few days later, she woke up and walked toward our bedroom door. She stopped, stared into the mirror, and said the man was there again. When I asked what he looked like, she told me he was the same man from before, and described him as old. I couldn't help but wonder if she was somehow seeing my grandfather, who had passed away years prior, before she was even born. Fast forward almost a decade. In May of 2023, we were living in Texas and searching for a house to buy. We went to see a home in a small town north of Killeen. Right away, something about the house felt off. It looked as if the owners had simply gotten up and left, furniture still in place, personal items scattered everywhere, and the fridge full of spoiled food that gave off a strong, rotten smell. My daughter, who was 12 by then, refused to go inside and stayed outside. While we were looking around inside, I had already decided I did not like the place. Suddenly, my daughter rushed to the front door, pale and shaking, hyperventilating, as she told me there was a lady outside. I reassured her that we were alone, but she explained that she had been looking at the grass, and when she looked up, she saw a pale, older woman standing right in front of her, who then vanished. Later, I looked up the house's history. It turned out an elderly couple had owned the property and lived there for most of their lives. The husband had passed away about 10 years earlier, inside the house. The wife had died just a few months before our visit. In such a small town, with only homes, a church, and a cemetery, it seemed likely she had passed away there too. I've often wondered about these moments. At 3 years old, my daughter saw a man no one else could see. At 12, she saw a woman who had recently passed. I can't help but ask myself, could my daughter truly be seeing things that others can't?
The Glowing Seat by Mai. So, a friend and I were at the mall. It was just around noon when we went to see a movie. We were there alone for a while. I believe some people eventually came in, but I don't really remember that part too well. I always took the seats furthest to the back in the theater because I don't like straining my neck to look up. About two rows of seats ahead of us, we saw one chair, slightly to the left of center, that was totally illuminated by white light. Of course, we both chalked it up to being from the projector above us, because we were sitting right underneath it in the back row. But what made it odd was that it was only that seat that was illuminated in white. It was just the fabric, from the top all the way to the bottom cushion. There was no residual bleeding of light coming from or touching other seats, or the floor or anything. So, me and my friends discussed how weird this was to each other. And this was before the movie even started. It was just running ads and previews. So, me and my friends wanted to run experiments with the seat. Our first thought was to attempt to find the source of the light. We figured if we were able to cast a shadow on it with our bodies, we would be able to identify which direction the light was coming from. We both huddled around it, climbed on top of it, and so on. But nothing worked. No matter what we tried, the entire chair continuously glowed white. It was as if the chair were perfectly wrapped in saran wrap made of light. Again, the light didn't bleed into any of the other chairs on the floor. It was just perfectly encompassing this one chair. That's the thing that made it odd. As well as the fact that we weren't able to disrupt the light, no matter what we attempted. Well, eventually, we just watched the movie as it started playing and periodically checked on the chair. It was still illuminated for a while. But eventually, the movie got good, and we kind of forgot about the chair, temporarily. However, when the credits rolled, we checked on the chair one last time, and the light was gone. The credits were rolling, but the theater lights weren't on yet, so it was still dark. But now the chair looked like any other chair in the theater. It was creepy because we weren't in a creepy environment when it happened. It was during the day. I guess we didn't freak out too much about it, but we still don't have an answer. My intuition tells me there is probably a logical explanation for this, but I still can't think of anything myself.
The Girl at the Desk by Katie Plays Dead. I was listening to an episode of Odd Trails and heard the story about someone seeing their future self, and the author asked if anyone else had experienced something similar. I'm not sure if this counts as a future self, but I do have a strange story about seeing what I believe was a version of me. It was the early 2000s. And I was around 16 or 17, the age when you've finally outgrown family holidays and prefer staying home alone like a grown-up. Obviously, I invited a few friends over. We ended up raiding the liquor cabinet, playing games, and having typical teenage fun. We were all a little tipsy and decided it was far too late for anyone to go home. I grew up in a little place called Washington in the north of England, and we probably had one taxi driver for the whole town, so that wasn't an option. I set two friends up in my little brother's room, another in mine, and I slept in my parents' room. I drifted off, then woke up later with that awful feeling that someone else was in the room. At first, I assumed one of my friends had decided to bunk in with me. We were all close. So I opened my eyes, expecting to see Gavin or Luis curled up next to me. Instead, I saw a girl. She was sitting at the computer desk, her back to me. And the strangest part was, She looked exactly like me. She was wearing a black vest top with big white polka dots, and her hair was cut and styled just like mine, the selfie look from Final Fantasy VIII. My first thought was that I was just half asleep. I closed my eyes, rubbed them hard, then opened them again. But she was still there, sitting perfectly still, silent, unmoving. I have never been as scared in my life as I was in that moment. Knowing my friends were just a wall away, but being too terrified to move or speak was unbearable. I was convinced that if I made a sound, whatever she was would realize I was awake. Even now, I get chills thinking about it. In the end, I slowly turned over to face the other way, and somehow, eventually, I fell back asleep. I've had so many arguments with my skeptic brother about this. He insists it was just a dream. But I know it wasn't. I do suffer from sleep paralysis, and I'm familiar with how my vision blurs when I wake up half-dreaming. Usually I see shapes, spiders 9 times out of 10. But here's the thing. I always know when I'm half asleep. I know the difference between something my brain is inventing and something that's actually there. That night was not one of those times. I'm 40 now, and I can still remember every detail, every sound, every thought, every shiver of fear. What was she? A glitch in the Matrix? A past or future version of myself sitting at that computer? I'll never know.
A Night in an Old Welsh Farmhouse by Expensive Leather 985. I went on a holiday to Wales a week ago. I didn't encounter any ghosts, which are said to be numerous there, but I slept in a local's house. It was very old and isolated, a farmhouse surrounded by woods with a superb view of the surrounding hills. We stayed in a wing of the farmhouse reserved for us. The other part was occupied by the owners. We arrived in the evening after a long drive, and we were relieved to finally be able to rest and have a good night before leaving the next day. The house seemed very welcoming to us, but also very inhabited. It was decorated with wooden furniture that seemed to have been there since the construction of the farm. Our bedroom was upstairs, very comfortable, but the impression of the presence, not hostile, was even more intense there. I fell asleep and had a hyper-realistic but very strange dream. I saw myself in that same room. I observed the chest of drawers in front of the bed, on which was arranged a strange diorama representing a landscape. Observing it more attentively, I noted with horror that this landscape was made up of bits of stuffed cats, arranged on a velvet fabric which formed a relief of hills. A severed head, paws, and tails emerged from this macabre montage. I jumped in shock and turned to my partner to wake him up. When I turned around to look at the diorama again, the cat pieces were gone. Only the velvet hills remained. I began to panic. I was convinced that we were being watched and that we had to flee without the house guessing our intentions. I held a casual conversation with my partner while making discreet signs to them to try and make them understand that we were in danger and that we had to leave. Then I remember that we were pushing the car so as not to make a noise with the engine, and at one point, we were chased by the owners who were shooting at us with a bow and arrow. The last scene ended up waking me up. My partner also had strange dreams that night. He heard footsteps on the carpet in the hallway, Then he saw the owner come to watch us in our room while we slept. I try to explain things by coincidence, but I think back a lot to this morbid dream. We slept in 10 different accommodations during this stay, and this was the only one where we felt discomfort. Yet I have a good memory of it, as the place was so beautiful. But I don't think I would have wanted to spend another night there, and oddly enough, the next day, when we left this accommodation, we actually had a near miss on the road, and it shook us up so much that I noted the exact location on Google Maps.
Aunt Robin's Radio by Leia. I was pretty agnostic about paranormal stuff until it happened to me. Always been into ghosts and stuff, but I'm a very show-me-the-evidence type of person. I finally feel like something is out there, though. When my great-aunt died in 2013, and my mom inherited her house in Olympia, I took time off work to help her sort through her things and get it ready to sell. The first few days were fine. We'd go through boxes, put clothes aside to donate, that kind of thing. On the fourth night, I was in the kitchen at around 11 o'clock, making tea, when the radio turned on. Not loud, just background volume. It was playing big band music, which my aunt loved. I walked over and turned it off. The dial was definitely in the off position when it came on. Old radios do weird things, I figured. Electrical short or something. My mom was in my aunt's bedroom when it happened, and all she did was laugh it off when I told her about it. Then, two nights later, it happened again, closer to 11 o'clock. And this time, my mom heard it too. Same volume, same type of music. We both paused what we were doing, and she glared at me with her eyes wide. I really wanted to say, "I told you so," but it freaked me out even more the second time. The next evening, I was back at the house by myself, and I heard it again. I was in the living room, and I heard that same tinny, big band sound. Once I got into the kitchen, though, it went silent. I clearly heard it. The same way you hear anything else from a nearby room. Not imagined, I heard it. I almost left, but I felt stupid. At 34 years old, at the time, why should I worry about a radio? I was probably more uncomfortable facing the fact that paranormal stuff could actually be real. My mom showed up a bit later, and as I was loading some final boxes into my car, she came running out of the house. It was actually really funny, and by the look on her face, I knew she must have heard the music. Even stranger, though, she said she had unplugged the radio, and as she was taking it out to the garage, it started blaring loud trumpet noises for about 2 seconds. That's all that really happened. I don't know how to end this, but I kinda wish we kept the radio.
Okay, this one is from Patrick, and they're referencing the episode 200, Frank and the Alien. I liked that one.
Ooh, yeah, good one.
They said, "Wow, I've always thought about drift theory ever since I was in high school. I just heard the term in this episode. My top experiences are, one, a couple of years ago, things felt slightly off and I randomly looked at myself in the mirror and stared at my face for a long time, feeling curious and interested. I felt like I was looking at my face for the first time." That's actually something that's not quite uncommon. There,
there's a lot of myth and lore around not looking at yourself in the mirror, especially for too long, because it'll start looking like somebody else is looking back at you, or your face will change, things like that. Have you heard of that?
In the context of psychedelics, that's a big no-no. I know that much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, even just under the influence of something like weed, I don't even like to do it. It makes me think of that Larry David scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm where he goes into the garage after he gets high and he starts talking to himself in the mirror and like slapping himself in the face, freaking out. Like, that's me every time. So
yeah,
I totally get that.
Makes sense. Not for everybody.
I think we talked about that in the past. Somebody referenced like a podcast that did an episode on that. I need to check that out because I've definitely had experiences where I tried it. Like I stared in the mirror for as long as I could. I mostly just got bored, but I guess I just started to notice my imperfections, my large pores and my acne scars, and I just decided to never look in a mirror again.
It could be worse. You could be sun gazing, eyes open, mind you.
Yes, that is the funniest thing. That's a real thing. People just staring directly into the sun. There's video of them doing it. Like I saw a documentary on it, and they're just crying, blinding themselves, staring at the sun.
Ignore your body's messages. Keep staring.
Keep staring. Like they're absorbing some kind of special power.
Too much vitamin D, apparently.
Yeah. And though I do hear that sun gazing is actually healthy if you do it like sunrise or sunset when the sun is just peeking over the horizon. But even then.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Even then, yeah, I think it's just nice and relaxing. It's just a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
They also said, a few months ago, I felt this weird pain or discomfort on the joints of my face. I don't know what they mean, but I guess their jaw or something.
Maybe, that's all I can think of.
Yeah. Yeah, they felt this weird pain or discomfort and their face was bashed in before they drifted. Pretty interesting. That was a little confusing. I'm not sure what you mean by that, but wild nonetheless.
Wild indeed. Maybe they meant like orifices or something.
Oh, they're asking, was my face bashed in before I drifted? Oh, I see. So from their previous existence in reality, they don't have a memory of it, but maybe their face was bashed in before they drifted. That's an interesting thought. You know how sometimes you just get like a random pain or a random twitch or something goes numb or feels weird and, you know, you freak out and you think that you're having a heart attack or something?
All the time.
Maybe that is from a drift, like that was from a past life that you just moved over to in this reality. Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
I don't like the sharp needling pains for no reason down like the shoulder blade.
Oh, yeah.
Or down to your fingertips for absolutely no discernible reason whatsoever. Just ow, pain, it's sharp, it hurts. And then it just goes away and you have no idea why it happened.
Yeah. This might be sharing a little bit too much, but this is a very common thing. Have you ever had those anal cramps that just come out of nowhere?
I was thinking about that. Yeah, or like the Gucci cramps or like the pee hole cramps, same sort of thing. Yeah, but it's not like a kidney stone. And yeah.
Everyone I've talked to about this and brought this up to, they're like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I'm like, no, it's just, it's just a cramp. Like any other cramp. It's just a scary place.
It feels like a splinter. Those are so scary.
It is terrifying. But don't worry, listener, if it's your first time hearing about this outside of your own reality, it's common and there's nothing wrong with you. Nova Pixie said, referencing episode 201, let's see the pic of the head.
Okay, that's which one?
Yeah, I know, exactly. It's a weird one. That's kind of like a dirty text.
Well, I guess since we're in Discord, I could probably just post it right now on the fly.
Yeah, you just got to figure out how to do the blur thing, because I know there are people in the Discord that won't want to see it. I know there's a way to do it. It's just like a command. I think you put it in like parentheses or maybe two dashes, something like that. We'll figure it out.
It's curly brackets, ghost, semicolon, then the picture directory, and then you close the curly brackets.
Okay. Alana said, in referencing episode 198, most nights it appears that I did not dream, as I cannot for the life of me remember them. This has been happening for years now. However, I work on a cruise ship. Lots of freaky shit goes on a cruise ship. And during my afternoon break, I nap. 99% of the time, I'll dream. most of the dreams I can't describe here as they're 18 plus. Wow, this is a saucy episode.
Yeah.
That's also not uncommon. Sleeping in a new place, it has something to do with your survival instincts, but you end up having a lot of dreams when you're sleeping in a new place. There's some science behind it, but still, dreams are so far beyond what we know about science right now that I don't think any of it's necessarily fact or sound, but it's not uncommon. In fact, in the story that we'll get to a bit later, the Welsh farmhouse, the person had a bunch of scary dreams when they were sleeping somewhere new. It was this creepy old Welsh house. And yeah, that's exactly what I think happened with them, but we'll get to that. Moving on, actually, before we go, you remember a lot of your dreams as well, right, Brandon?
Always, more often than not.
Yeah, I almost always remember my dreams and I log them all whenever I can. Mm-hmm. And have you noticed that when you sleep somewhere else, you have extra dreams or extra vivid dreams?
Not at all. They're about the same. They're equally weird, equally
oh yeah,
whatever.
Well, I guess that makes sense because you always have weird dreams. You said that you lucid dream all the time?
At least once a week, probably, yeah.
That's insane. That's insane because for people like me, it takes a lot of work to even get to that point.
I can't stay lucid for very long, but I do become lucid at least weekly, yeah.
Yeah, man. I want you to dive into that and I want you to harness that power to do some crazy stuff, learn to write symphonies in your dreams or something, man.
Man, I've been trying. It's so much more difficult than it seems. Like getting to the point where I could actually do it regularly, that part was easy. It's just you can stare at your hands and do all the reality checks over and over and over and mm-hmm. be in the middle of telling yourself, okay, I'm lucid, let's stay lucid and repeat it as a mantra. And then you just drift away from it. It's really strange.
Yeah. And I'll have my eyes closed and I'll wake up from the lucid dream and I'll try to pretend that I'm not awake and go back into it.
Yeah.
And nothing works, man. Yeah. Let's see, we've got Autumn referencing episode 200. The metaphysical reality theory made me remember this literal cassette tape that I happened to find on the ground in a state 8 hours away from home, almost like it had been placed there. It has a written date from 1983, and it's a recording of someone's past lives under hypnosis. I sent an email about it because it's right up your alley. Congrats on the 200th episode. Is there a way that you can either copy that tape and send it to our PO box? I have one. Or could you digitize it? It's actually not that hard. Or even just if you could play it back and record it on your phone and send that to us, I'd really love to hear that. That's super interesting.
Yeah, that would be nice. I actually saw that email and I've been meaning to respond.
Okay.
I think I'm just going to use my friend's address. I got somebody who does not mind being like a little scapegoat for that. So I'll reply to the email and you can send it over there. Just don't harass them, please.
Okay. I have one last comment here from Assyria. This is also referencing episode 200. I remember in 2013, there was a commercial that came on TV. It was of an old lady rocking, like a singing in a rocking chair, and saying Nelson Mandela over and over again. I know of only three people outside of myself that remembers that commercial out of the 100 at least people that I've told. That's a weird commercial because of the Mandela effect. It's almost like it was this weird hypnosis tape that played, hypnotizing us into the beginning of the Mandela effect, because that's where the origins came from, Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, it very well could be.
It kind of reminds me of those Game Boy and Game Boy Color. Yeah, it's mostly the Game Boy Color commercials from the 90s. They would always do really weird stuff like that. Like the vision of like a grandma rocking back and forth, repeating a line. They would always do creepy, bizarre stuff like that on Nintendo and Game Boy commercials.
I remember the Game Boy camera. That thing was fun. I used to take so many pictures of myself at Toys R Us. I'm surprised they had it up for as long as they did.
That's funny. I wonder if I ever saw your picture on it, because I remember going up to it and playing with it too.
Very good chance. I remember one time, this isn't my proudest moment, but I was at Target looking at the games, not even playing the Game Gear behind me, but I saw a kid walk nearby past a different aisle. And I just remember thinking, oh, he wants to play that. He's going to get it before me. Even though I had every opportunity to play it, I turned around and started playing it. And then lo and behold, this kid, bless his heart, he walks right up to me and he just says, can I play?
Yeah.
And of course, I back down immediately and walk off.
Yeah, you had to give it up because you're a nice person.
That and being non-confrontational. I knew what I was doing was a jerk move.
Yeah.
I was like 8.
I've done the same thing for sure. You know, I think that's where most of my neck and back pain came from. It's playing the display video games, especially the ones at Walmart, because they would have the TV like 8 feet up in the air, angled down at you, and you'd be holding the controller in front of you, looking directly up, playing it. I played so much Tony Hawk and Metal Gear Solid on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I did post that Goat Head picture in Discord. It is there, and it was easier than it seems. Once you attach the picture, it just says there's like a little eyeball, and that's it. Mark it as a spoiler. We're good to go. It is in the Odd Trails podcast chat channel.
Yeah, so join our Discord if you want to get in on all of these goodies.
Link in the show notes.
Somebody said that people slaughter goats in the comments for food, but do they leave the head and...
Yeah, they don't take it with them into the city and leave it at a park.
Exactly, in a paper bag. No, they don't do that unless somebody's... I think it was just somebody playing a prank or something like that, but it's...
Yeah.
It's still creepy. Especially because just the connection of goat heads with, you know, ritual sacrifices and satanic stuff and all that, you know, all the stuff that we get from movies and books.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into these stories.
Let's do it.
I want to talk about that creepy robed faceless people story.
Oh, yeah. So I don't really know what to make of it, but my first thought was No Face from Spirited Away.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I like that. Probably not the same thing. Unless it can travel to, I totally forgot how to pronounce it. I used to call it Nambia.
Yeah, I'd forgot too, and let's not even say it.
Let's
just pretend. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say it reminds you of No Face, I thought you were going to say Dick Tracy. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, I highly recommend it. It's like one of those campy, pulpy comic book movies from the early 90s. They did a lot of those, like The Shadow, The Phantom. Even I guess you can consider the first Batman one. It was a lot of fun, but there's a character called No Face, and they literally had no face. It was creepy.
Ooh, I like that. Really cool setting though, the black coats in the middle of the night, like some strange ritual.
While I don't ever want to actually be in that position, I want so bad to see something like that in real life. I really actually do. I want to have an experience like that.
Yeah, something visual would be cool. You know, we've both heard the noises, little stuff here and there, but to have a proper visual experience would be really interesting. And a corroborated one, of course.
Yeah, exactly. We've had like a lot of auditory experiences, you and I, and a lot of dream stuff, a lot of synchronicity, a lot of those like happenstance things, but we've never come across and seen something, you know what I mean? Like a ghost or something like very creepy like this. I really hope we do before the end of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Speaking of wishing, I wish that I knew more about Anton LaVey, because while I'm familiar with him and I know like the basic info, you know, that I've heard on other podcasts and in popular culture, there's so much of a rabbit hole to go down with him. And I find it very interesting. And I don't know if half of it's true, but I'm going to try and dive deep. I would like to ask the listeners if you have any resources, any books specifically, that would be great on the topic of Anton LaVey. Podcast, sure, but I really would love to read about this type of thing, or maybe even a documentary that doesn't have a bunch of annoying spooky music set to it, you know?
There's always the Satanic Bible. I actually read that in high school, my junior year.
Oh, I should read that. Yeah.
It's interesting.
I mean, is he the author?
He is.
Okay, perfect. I guess that's a perfect place to start. Yeah.
Yeah, and you also have the Satanic Temple, which is distinct from the Church of Satan. They're a bit more politically motivated, but they share similar beliefs as to who or what Satan is or represents.
Yeah, but this story was very interesting, and you had mentioned that we received this email a long, long time ago, and I don't think that we ran the story. I think it just kind of got buried with all the other submissions, but we also got this emailed to us for Let's Not Meet. And my assistant producer sent it over to me, and she was like, hey, this sounds more like an Odd Trail story. I told them we could use it on that podcast, and they were cool with that. And I was like, okay, yeah. And when I sent it to you, you were like, oh no, we've done this. Oh God, I hope we haven't, because I love this story and I don't think I've ever heard it. And so we're running it. And I swear to God, if we did do it and it was under a different author name and a different title at some point, please let us know. But I don't think that we did. We did a very thorough search and we couldn't find anything related to it in our episode history.
Yeah, I remember reading it, but apparently I didn't add it to our bank of stories for whatever reason. Apparently it's a good one. It struck a chord with you, so take it away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, it really just made me want to learn a bit more about Anton LaVey. I've been diving really deep into certain timelines, historical facts about biblical stuff, and I just find anything to do with the supernatural and religion super interesting. So I think this is just a great thing to add to the list. But I think the story that I really wanted to talk about was the old Welsh farmhouse. So I brought up in the comment that this person stayed the night in this creepy Welsh farmhouse and they had these vivid nightmares. And not only did they have the vivid nightmare, but the person they were with also had a vivid nightmare that was similar. And I found this to be interesting because it wasn't just the author that was having the vivid dream about this being a dangerous place. It was also the person that was with them. And I've always been curious about the idea of the dreamscape being traversable with people.
I see.
When I interviewed Haley, who is a lucid dream coach from the Lucid Mystic, you can find her on YouTube. Very cool stuff. She talked about how her and her friend did some experiments to meet each other in the dreamscape. And they were actually able to describe certain candies that she had placed on her nightstand or her dresser or something. In fact, it may have been an out-of-body experience, like an astral projection rather than a lucid dream. It's been a couple of years since I talked to her and heard the story. But in any case, they were able to kind of traverse into each other's dreamscape or astral realm. And he was able to confirm like certain candies that she had placed on her dresser, which was really, really cool and interesting to me. And I don't see why, if the dreamscape is something that is a place that we go to rather than just something that's going on in our minds and we become lucid in our dreams, that it wouldn't sync up with somebody else and we wouldn't be able to like, I don't see why we wouldn't be able to interact with their dreams and them interact with ours. We should do this experiment tonight. Everybody listening to this episode, and I'll remember to remind you, Brandon, when I release it. Everybody listening to this episode, when you go to bed tonight, set the intention to cross over into mine and Brandon's dreams. We're all going to go to the same place. Okay, I want to do this as an experiment. Everybody, let's think of going to the same place. Where should we go, Brandon?
Let's say, can we go back in time?
Sure, let's go back in time. Where should we go?
Okay, let's go to, let's go back to Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco, 1960s.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Summer of Love. Let's do it. Let's go to Golden Gate Park. We'll meet at Hippie Hill, as they call it.
Okay.
And we'll all just kind of dance around and see what happens.
You heard it, everyone. On the release of this episode, make sure that you set the intention tonight to meet Brandon and I in Haight-Ashbury at Hippie Hill.
Correct.
All right. Awesome.
Well, since we already talked about mirrors a little bit, might as well talk about The Man in the Mirror by Alexandra. I like the idea of mirrors kind of storing moments that can like replay information, kind of like a photograph or a video camera, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it reflects back, but maybe it also retains.
Yeah, like it's recording everything that's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. Well said.
I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying.
Yeah, basically. And not so many words. That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, mirrors are weird. It's weird that you can look at something and see yourself in it. You know what I mean? What the hell? What's going on?
Right. And like how a camera lens just distorts things just ever so slightly, where I don't really think we notice it all that much. But when you see comparison pictures of the same person or whatever taken with a different camera lens and it becomes so obvious, it's like, wow, how did I not realize that that was not the same? You know what I mean? How did I not realize that that wasn't like a one-to-one capturing of that face, or my own face for that matter? It's really strange.
Yeah, it's just a different perception, and that's, I don't know.
That's enough to be weird. No, that's yeah, fair. All fair. Did you hear about how they're storing songs and books as physical DNA molecules instead of like hard drives?
What? Explain this.
Oh man, okay.
This is not right. I don't like this.
I am not going to explain this anywhere close to properly, but
okay.
Think of it as like binary in computers, you have ones and zeros on and off.
Yeah.
But with DNA, you have four different criteria. I forget the acronyms, but all the letters make up different parts of the DNA. So instead of zero and one, you have A, B, C, and D. Those aren't the actual letters, I don't think.
Sure.
So with those combinations, they can create, you can basically turn a binary code of information into the DNA's four character code of information, structure it physically and store it, and then retain it later and extract the DNA and then reconvert it back into a computer readable language, and it reconstructs a song or a book.
Well, I guess that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just too weird. Things are getting too weird.
It is weird.
Like, it seems unnecessary too.
It is efficient. I will say that it's a lot more reliable than magnetic tapes or whatever else, failing hard drives.
I guess you're right. Yeah. I've been digitizing all of my VHS so that I have, you know, these original experiences, because VHS does not last. I already have a few that have like little specks of mold and stuff on them. Like, Yeah, I could see it. That's kind of cool. But I don't know. I'm just scared of the future. The future freaks me out, to quote Motion City Soundtrack. It always has, and especially now. The rate at which we're progressing with technology is just so much faster and scarier than I expected it to be in our lifetime.
I know. We're doing more every 5 years than we have done in every 500 years prior to this. It's so strange, and We just got to slow down.
Yeah, let's slow down, everyone. Anyways, great episode, great stories, and I had a great time talking with you.
It was a nice time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you guys have got stories to share, send them to stories@oddtrails.com. If you want to comment on any of our episodes and hear your comments on the show, you can always leave those on your Spotify when you listen to the episode. And you can also just write to us on Discord or send us an email if you have anything to say. And if you want to support the show and get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate, go to patreon.com/oddtrails. And make sure you check out my podcast, Let's Not Meet, if you want some true scary stories on the not-so-paranormal side. We'll see you guys next time. Everybody, stay safe.
Peace out.
And the ghouls disturb you, darling.